Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you downloaded us from. Thanks very much for downloading us. Do tell your friends about us and do rate us. We have a special guest. This is the B segment, which is always the guest segment. The A's are the medical news of the week and what it means to you. The B, of course, is guests. And we have a sensational guest to you. Michael Moss wrote a number one New York Times bestseller. As you know, I'm partial to them since I have had the privilege of writing several of them. He wrote Sugar, Salt, Fat. Actually, it's Salt, Sugar, Fat. How the Food Giants Hooked Us, a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter, formerly with the New York Times. He's been on Dr. Oz Show, CNN's The Lead, CBS The Morning, and The Daily Show. I can tell him that of all the shows, I've been on virtually all the shows other than The Daily Show and have tried to get on that when in any way I could and could not. So I'm envious of him in that. But in any case, this book is called Hooked, Free, that is Food, Free Will, and How the Food Giants Exploit Our Addictions. It's published by Random House. His website, mossbooks.us, mossbooks.us. We, as usual, are sponsored by Persona Nutrition. If you're confused about vitamins and supplements, they help you analyze your diet. And as Michael Moss will tell us, our diets have been corrupted by some of the big food companies and our own, if you will, choices because of that. And so you may not have a perfect diet. You may not be getting, in fact, 93% of us, based on the data, don't get even 20% of all the daily intended nutrients, that is, the ones that are recommended for us by the federal government. We don't even get 20% of all of them in for something over the aspect of 93% of us don't. So you can take the free online assessment to find out what you're missing or not. And to get supplements personalized just for you, go to mypersona.com. That's mypersona, P-E-R-S-O-N-A.com. Michael, I'm privileged to talk to you. So tell us, one, how you got into this field. What caused you to become an investigative journalist? And then how you got into food from that?
I became a reporter in high school. I went to a competitive public high school in San Francisco. And about the only teacher who said anything nice about me was the English teacher. And she also happened to teach journalism. I think one day she had me out on an assignment. I came back, wrote it up, and she goes, "You know, Michael, I think you have a knack for this." And then I discovered that somebody would actually pay me to wander the world writing about things. And I thought, that's a job I think I want to do. And I became an investigative journalist. And in 2018, I was in Algeria interviewing some Islamic militants, actually, when I got into trouble and had to come home after spending the previous few years in Iraq and Syria and looking at the war on terrorism and the war in Iraq. And my editor suggested that I should take a look at the processed food industry because there had been an outbreak of salmonella in peanuts being manufactured in Georgia on the Alabama line. And in looking at sort of accidental pathogens in food, one of my best sources who tested hamburger for E. coli said, "You know, Michael, as tragic as these incidents are, you really should look at what my industry is intentionally adding to its products." He was really concerned about the salt in processed meat, which led me to look at sugar and fat as this kind of unholy trinity, if you will, on which the processed food industry relies on to get us to not just like their products, but want more and more. And I mentioned Iraq because it's like I went from one war to an even bigger one, and you know the numbers better than I do, but, you know, obesity are up to 42%. Type 2 diabetes tied to diet. I've lost track of the millions of cases now. You know, even gout in this country. And so that's how I started crawling into the underbelly of this, you know, trillion plus industry to kind of figure out, how did they get us so hooked?
And when you look at this, you've done some remarkable reporting, but I want to get a little bit into the science. What does, for example, sugar do? Is it just sweet to the tongue, or does it change the brain release or function or even structure?
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, it's kind of the most difficult of the ingredients that you can actually see on the label. In my newest book, Hooked, I actually write about things that aren't on the label that are maybe more problematic. But sugar has this incredible ability to excite the brain really quickly. And one of the hallmarks of drugs and drug addiction is that the faster a substance hits the brain, the more apt the reward center of the brain is going to get us to act compulsively, impulsively. I love scientists who divide the brain into two parts, basically. One, the go brain, which is kind of the primitive part of the brain that gets us to do things like run from danger or eat. And then there's the stop part of the brain, which is the thinking part, where we have our executive function and our free will, our willpower, if you will. And what happens when we turn to these ultra-processed foods or convenience foods or foods I'm starting to call like fast groceries is that the balance of power shifts so that the go brain takes over the entire brain and puts the stop brain to sleep. So there's this wonderful study that someone did on sugar where they, in order to measure the speed of sweet taste, they put a little sugar on people's tongues and asked them to push a button when they tasted sweet. And these subjects in the experiments were pushing that button in less than a second, because when sweet taste hits the tongue, as does salt, it sends a signal to the brain, which in turn sends a signal back to, wow, I love that. And it's faster, that signal, because it uses our own kind of neurological system that's built to get us to eat, is faster than cigarette smoke, alcohol, even hard narcotics in terms of the speed with which it hits the brain.
Now, and let me go and probe just a little bit, because you are a real expert on this. Do we lose our free will this way? In other words, does it really, are we so addicted to this type of food that it almost takes away that free will once you start down that road?
You know, if you'd said to me 5 years ago when I started the research for this book that, you know, Twinkies were as addictive as heroin, I would have thought, that's like nutso. Are you kidding me? But there's little doubt in my mind now that in some ways these foods are even more addictive than even narcotics. And part of the explanation for that is in the definition, right? So one of the first things I did was I went to the tobacco companies, which actually changed their mind. After denying that smoking was addictive for decades, in the year 2000, they turned around and said, well, actually, guess what? You're right. Smoking is addictive. And the CEO of Philip Morris at the time came up with this definition of addiction, a repetitive behavior that some people find difficult to quit. And that perfectly characterizes, you know, not only Philip Morris's cigarettes at the time, but at the time it was the single largest manufacturer of processed food. They owned Kraft, Nabisco, and the old company General Foods. And I'll tell you the most remarkable thing is that I met the company's former chief lawyer, their general counsel, and he was telling me that he was one of those people who could take or leave smoking. He could have a cigarette during a business meeting, then put the pack away for the rest of the day and not have any impulse to take it out again. But he could not go near the companies, because they owned Oreos at the time. He could not go near a bag of Oreos for fear of losing control and eating half of the bag. And so I think if you look at addiction as this repetitive behavior that causes us to lose some control, and that loss of control can happen on a spectrum. It can be binge eating, where you're just kind of blindly, you know, opening one package or the other with complete absence of free will, or if it's just kind of a day-to-day, you know, deepening dependence on these convenience foods, where the loss of control sort of happens more gradually over time.
We're talking with Michael Moss, the author of Hooked: Food, Free Will, and How the Food Giants Exploit Our Addictions. And as I read through the book, and it's an outstanding book, beautifully written, as you can guess from the conversation, I got the feeling that we actually lose free will. That you know, one of the things man is supposed to have over the reptiles or reptilian behavior, which is that go brain part, is that we have free will. But it's almost like the food companies are trying to take that away, and have succeeded. So that's why I asked that question. So you talk about what I would call products that almost have nothing to do, or flavors that have nothing to do with food, that are created for this purpose. Can you give the listeners a example of this and how they create them?
Yes, I'll get to that. And just as a backdrop, so the overarching theme of sort of this latest book of mine, Hooked, is that the way the industry is hooking us on their products is not just kind of the salt, sugar, fat, these ingredients, but they're tapping into our basic biology that in essence is there inside us to attract us, not just to eating, but to overeat. Because we have to remember that for most of our existence, you know, overeating and putting on a little bit of body fat was a really good thing that enabled us to get through hard times, our brains to grow, enable us to have more babies. And the problem lies in the food companies changing the nature of our food in the last 50 years, you know, in a way that our biology hasn't had time to catch up. And so one of the things that we're attracted to in food from an instinctual basis is cheapness. We love food that's inexpensive. And I don't mean to make light of people who don't have enough money to shop at all for dinner and in food security situation. But even the rest of us, the number one sort of driving force in the grocery store is the cost of the product. And so the food companies use chemical laboratories who mix and match formulations of chemicals to mimic real flavors. These are the companies that came up with pumpkin pie spice in the autumn, which began to spread around the grocery store in all kinds of crazy products, right? They can use as many as 80 different chemicals to achieve kind of the perfect formulation of pumpkin pie spice mimic. But their real accomplishment for the processed food industry is reformulating products to reduce the price, because the companies know that, you know, a box of toaster breakfast pastries, if you can get the price down 10 cents, that's going to excite us. And so that these chemists are, you know, part of the processed food system to hit that one basic instinct. And there's so many others. You know, we're attracted to variety. We're attracted to calories by nature. And the food companies have experts working with them to accentuate those aspects of our basic biology in a way that knocks us off kilter and, as you point out, sort of robs us of our free will to sort of make our own decisions about what to eat and how much.
Just to give you one of the stories that will be in next week's News of the Week, because I just read it after this week's News of the Week, so in 1038A, is the story of how much weight people have gained during the pandemic. And what was amazing is that 42% of people have gained more than 15 pounds, with the average being 29 pounds, which is amazing. In 1 year, 29 pounds for 42% of the American population in a representative sample is only a representative sample of 3,000 people. But isn't that, I mean, to me, that's an amazing thing of how they must be addicted to, I mean, there must be an incredible sale of those cookies, if you will, the and of fake foods.
Yeah, not just sale, though, because cost is sort of the only one of kind of the emotions that they're driving it. They are really good at sort of pushing all of our emotional buttons. And this happened during the pandemic, because we thought the pandemic at least was going to get us away from the vending machine at work, right? One of the more treacherous corners of the ultra-processed food industry. But what happened is many of us turned our kitchen cabinets into vending machines because we went shopping. And because of the fear and the angst and the emotion of the moment, we found ourselves buying junk food that we hadn't touched since we were children because of the powerful memories that these products deposit in our brains, and they stay there for all that time. And so the snack food companies were just elated at soaring sales of snack foods during not just the beginning of the pandemic, but it's continued to this day.
Well, 29 pounds isn't, you know, to, as we say, to be half the age you are is possible. And will be increasingly possible in this biologic revolution that we're undergoing now that we call the Great Age Reboot. But the antagonizing that is all of the diseases caused by overeating and probably the chemicals in food. And I was so interested in your conversations about free will and the way it is being, if you will, co-opted by the large food companies. What's the solution to this?
The solution kind of depends where you are in your trouble with food, if you will, and kind of where you are on that spectrum. And if you have an eating disorder, you're going to be looking for a doctor who can sort of help you work through
well,
that.
But What I'm talking about is we need a societal solution. I didn't, and that is because you know, if you look at it, with 43 or 44% of American obese, and another 32% overweight, with type 2 diabetes, and 11% predicted to go much higher by 2050, we're in trouble as a society. So how do we get out of this? Is it taxing the food? Is that the solution?
I think the solution's so complex that you probably have to do 10 things at once. And I sort of had this dream of having a zip code where I could go in and change 10 things about the food system. And they would all sort of work synergistically together. And you would start by putting a garden in the school because you want to get kids excited about eating radishes. And then you want them to bring that radish home to their parents who've never seen one before, but you want the parents to have an opportunity to buy that radish and not pay as much for it as they will a 2-pound, 3-cheese, 4-meat frozen pizza that's going to sell feed the whole family. And so you have to change the farming, because right now 90% of our farming system is geared toward growing ingredients and ultra processed foods and not fruits and vegetables. On and on. But I think that, again, the complexity of obesity, if you try to just change one thing from a societal standpoint, you're going to run into pitfalls. Now, from a personal standpoint, changing one thing may be the way to go, because one of the problems with diets is that if they're too strange, they're really hard to stick to. And so smart people I've talked to, that's one of the things they encourage people to do is, look, just try to change one aspect of your eating habits that you don't like and see how that goes. Give it some time, because you're trying to, you have a lifetime of forming bad eating habits. It's going to take some time to switch those around into good eating habits.
We've been talking with Michael Moss, author of a great book, Hooked: Food, Free Will, and How the Food Giants Exploit Our Addictions. It's published by Random House, available now on Amazon, B&N, and hopefully at your local independent as well. His website is Moss, M-O-S-S, books.us, mossbooks.us. It's a great book and has some incredible insights in it on how I think we are, at least as I see it, our free will is being taken away by some of the food industry. Michael, I want to thank you. Anything else you'd like to say to the 50,000 people who've downloaded this episode before we tell you about our sponsor?
Thank you for your work, and thanks to all of your listeners for hearing me and having me, and I wish everybody the best.
We've been on You, the Owner's Manual podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you downloaded us from. Let me say that we're sponsored by Persona Nutrition. You can get supplements personalized to yourself at mypersona.com. Take the free online assessment. And we'll be back next week. This has been 1037B. Next week, Jennifer Ashton is our guest talking about the new normal. Thanks again for downloading us. We'll talk to you next week.